For hundreds of years, we've brought you the news. For the info, we gave you the clues. Owners' profits were always sky high. Changing market now threatens our lives.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Navel Gazing. My name is Eugene Driscoll. I'm a reporter and editor with valleyindy.org. Got my own name mispronounced there. But we are a nonprofit online newspaper that covers Derby, Shelton, and Sonia, and Seymour. And joining me for this episode of Navel Gazing is Susan Agame from the Spooner House in Shelton. Welcome back to the podcast, Susan.
Thank you, Eugene. It is a pleasure to be here.
So I thought right off the bat, there's obviously so much going on in the world, the state, and Shelton even specifically in terms of COVID-19 virus. So the Spooner House is our homeless shelter. How are things there? How has this pandemic affected your operations, I guess, on a daily basis?
Sure. Well, as everyone is facing changes and modifications and unexpected both challenges and opportunities, we too have made quite a few adjustments to our regular operations. So, for example, we had to, cancel all groups coming in, and we rely very heavily on volunteers, volunteers who staff our food pantry, volunteers who serve as receptionists and answer the phones for us. We have volunteers who prepare and serve meals. Many people who have supported us over the years. And because of this pandemic, we've had to ask people not to come into the building. And some because of some of our volunteers fell into high risk populations, either because of age or underlying health conditions. And so we've tried to, we're picking up those tasks. Staff is picking up a lot of those tasks. Some of our residents of the shelter have really stepped up and have been assisting and been very, very cooperative. It's a very challenging time, even more so for our residents who are calling Spooner House their temporary home, and yet they've remained, they've had great attitudes and been very cooperative and still trying to, to work on their own plans. So we've had to suspend our volunteers, suspend our groups, and still keep them engaged. So we have volunteers that are reaching out to our food pantry clients to check in, to be a friendly voice, to see if everything's okay. We have other volunteers who are still preparing meals or providing for our meal, whether they're ordering it or providing the food items and dropping them off or having them delivered, so that we still have continuity of those programs. We've tried to limit, in and out of the building, even with our residents. And of course, cleaning and disinfecting, we have redoubled our efforts. There was a statewide effort to decompress shelters. Our facility, we have four dormitory spaces, and there are several people in each space. With the need for social distancing and maintaining space, we worked really hard to try and get people either into permanent housing, which is always our first goal, or to reunify with family and friends if they were able to do that, to stay in one place for the duration. And then the state initiated an effort where they were, in order to decompress these congregate settings, were placing some people who were in, particularly in high-risk categories, again, by age or underlying health condition, into hotel rooms across the state. We actually only had to place a couple of people there. We were able to move people to other spaces and provide for that distancing to make sure that we have that, and as well as dedicate. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. How many people are in the shelter right now? And then how many roughly did you have to relocate to other places, whether it be family, permanent housing, or hotels?
So right now we have 12 people, 12 residents, including two children. And we were we did have about 26 people at the start, and we were able to move out about 14. And then we had our no-freeze emergency winter shelter operating through the end of March. And we were also able to get, we were down to just two people coming through our no-freeze program, and we were able to get them placed as well. So we were very fortunate and able to respond quickly to that and really decompress our space, and also identify a couple of spaces in the building that should someone become symptomatic or be exposed, which is less likely because people aren't in and out. But if that were to happen, we have some spaces identified that people could isolate or be quarantined if necessary, assuming that they're not, they don't need medical attention.
And this decompression, the word that you use there, that came down from the state to spread people out, essentially, in order to adhere by the social distance rules that have been issued, or guidance. When did that take place? Was that over the last 2 weeks, or was that towards the beginning? And basically, how involved was that effort? Because that, that has to be something that comes down. You never had to do that before. How stressful was it like to just get through that?
Yeah, that was a whole new experience. So we really implemented that. We first started looking at it around right about just before the middle of March, about maybe around the 11th of March.
Okay.
We started moving some folks, really putting some concentrated effort out there. And then, within the next week to 10 days, we had most of the folks out. The last two people, were just this last week when our no freeze was coming to an end. And then Monday when the state had secured some additional hotel rooms, and we had two people to move.
And then how did you decide? If I was somebody who was in the shelter and you put this offer for a hotel room, if I don't want to go, how do you decide who's going where?
So this, as far as the hotel rooms, the state was very clear that priority was to be given to people over the age of 60, or those who had underlying health conditions. So okay. High blood pressure, diabetes, cardiac issues, that sort of thing. And so that really identified who would be moving. We wanted to move those people who are most at risk, because in the hotel rooms, they have much more distance, obviously, and isolation than they would here at the shelter.
Mm. Okay, gotcha. And then, so just to ask, you haven't had any COVID-19 positive cases within Spooner House since this began?
No, we've had no COVID positive cases. We've had no one who has been symptomatic. We are taking temperatures whenever, if somebody, even if they just, go out for, a 15-minute walk to get some fresh air, we're taking temperatures when they come in. We're taking temperatures of our staff when they arrive for their shift and asking the health screening questions every time someone reports to work, because we want to make sure that we are on top of things and do everything in our power to make sure that we're not exposing anyone and limiting any kind of spread. And so we've been very diligent about that. We did have some masks that were donated, so our staff has some masks, gloves. We do have the basic, PPE, personal protective equipment that we need for our staff. If we were to need masks for our residents, we currently do have enough for our residents. We don't have extras, but we have what we need, and I'm very grateful for that.
And then how much staff? What numbers are we talking about? How many people work there?
We have a total of 10 staff, 4 full-time and 6 part-time, which on a, for an operation that is 24/7, that can be challenging.
Yeah.
That's not a lot of people to schedule.
Yeah, and then
my staff has been great.
I was going to ask you, how's the staff putting up with this? And then in terms of the residents, people who are in a temporary situation trying to find permanent housing, I know my stress levels are through the roof, but I have a roof over my head and I'm employed, and I should not complain. How, in terms of mental health and maybe connecting people to services, how are the residents of the shelter handling this? I can't imagine what that must be like.
People are doing surprisingly well. We have, tried to relax some of our rules around, having access to the dorms more frequently, access to watching movies. In the past, we would limit the time for that because we really wanted people out, looking for employment, looking for housing, working on those plans. That's much more limited, their ability to do that now and to do it safely. So they're in much more. So we've relaxed some of those rules to make it easier for people. We've tried to provide some additional, games, books, puzzles so that people have things to do. There's been, trying to spend more time even just in conversation, even if it is 6 feet apart, and to really hear people's concerns. BH Care has been, great. They still have access through telehealth to be able to provide any mental health support for our clients. And that's one of the great things about the Valley community and the various social service agencies is that everyone is very well connected and able to, figure out ways to continue to provide services and work together to serve, the entire community. And my staff has been great. They're dependable. They're showing up. They've got a great attitude, hardworking. They are the salt of the earth, and I am grateful every day for all of them.
Hmm. And then when you're under normal operating conditions, when there's not a pandemic, engulfing the world, usually the people can't come into the Spooner House until a certain time. Just explain the normal operation. Because you had mentioned they're now allowed to come in earlier.
So what we do is we wouldn't shut down during the day, but we did encourage people to get out every day, to be taking steps towards permanent housing, employment, really adopting that housing first model too, to get people into housing. But the dorms would be closed. We'd lock them up in the morning. The dorms would not be accessible again until just before dinner to wash up for dinner and all. Because we didn't want people just sleeping all day or, we really wanted people working to get out and into their own place. Mm-hmm. But because it's much harder, there are not a lot of, there are many fewer job opportunities right now. There are fewer housing opportunities. There are landlords who are, understandably concerned about having people in and out looking at apartments. They may think, I can wait a month or two. If people can swing it, I'll wait a little longer until this passes. And so we didn't want everyone just sitting all together in the cafeteria or the lounge. So we opened up the dorm so some people could be upstairs, again, to have that space and distancing.
And then hopping back to one of the first things you said, and I've heard this from some of the nonprofit groups I've talked to and some of the local legislative people, the senior citizens and people of a certain age are the backbone of the volunteer community in the Valley, from what I'm learning. And you had mentioned in terms of senior citizens of course are the most vulnerable to threat by COVID-19, especially if they have underlying medical conditions. Are you seeing anybody coming, or I guess the policy at the Spooner House is no volunteers at all at this point? I was going to ask if the younger people are coming in to step up the role, because I've heard of that happening too in the Valley.
Yeah. We have one younger person who's been coming in who has been packing for our food pantry clients. She's been coming in and doing all of the packing so that we're ready for the next day to serve those clients who will be arriving. And we've modified those procedures as well. And so far, so good. We may end up needing to call on one or two additional people to assist with that. And we're kind of playing it by ear right now, really trying to limit the number of people. As I said, our food pantry is operational. We have not cut our services there, but we have modified it. So when people arrive for their food appointment, we're directing them to the side door. The cart the grocery cart is already packed for them. We wheel the cart outside for them to pack their car, their vehicle. And then when they're done, we bring the cart back inside, sanitize it, so it's ready to go for the next, you know, the next day. So we'll have everyone packed and have people in and out very quickly with limited contact. But we encourage people, if they have a need, to please call us, make an appointment. We are here, you know, to continue to meet that need. And we expect that that need will continue to grow as more people are out of work and struggling. We expect that the need for food assistance will grow, and we will be turning to the community for those who are able to continue to support us to meet that need.
Yeah, and that's the big question. How long is this going to go on? There's the fear of the unknown happening right now in terms of the economy, especially because we're getting some word that the number of cases might be slowing down, maybe. I don't want to give wrong information, but that's out there. But then to take a step back, Susan, you're very involved with the nonprofit agencies in the Valley on a sort of larger level, excuse me. And one thing I wanted to talk about is, I mean, just today, there was sort of a coordinated effort on social media to make people aware of the Valley Community COVID-19 Response and Recovery Fund. If anybody's listening and you're not familiar, if you go on Facebook and Twitter and put in hashtag ValleyCT, something will come up. And it's a partnership between the Valley United Way, Valley Community Foundation, Greater Valley Chamber of Commerce, and the Valley Council for Health and Human Services. They're partnering together, and they've established a fund to help people that are going to need it, because the great unknown is that people are going to need help going forward. So, Susan, what's happening there? Can you shed some light?
Absolutely. So I chair the Valley Council for Health and Human Services, and we are so proud to be partnering with the Valley Community Foundation, Valley United Way, and the Greater Valley Chamber of Commerce. Really, the VCF and Valley United Way, the foundation, and United Way have led the charge in creating this response and recovery fund, in fundraising, and then rolling out the application process, which is hot off the presses now. The first round, the applications will be due next week, and awards will be announced in a matter of days after that. The goal is to get money out to the agencies that are really on the front lines, working with people who are positive for COVID-19, who are symptomatic, who are caring for those. So it's our healthcare workers, our first responders, our frontline workers in so many ways who are face to face with our clients. And that's just for the first round. There will be additional rounds of the Response and Recovery Fund as the situation continues to evolve and change. But it's an exciting opportunity for people who want to do something and want to help to be able to contribute to this fund, which then will reach the broader Health and Human Service agencies and the broader community. It's an easy way to have real impact and make a difference in people's lives right here in our community.
It's so well said, because as I sit here and I read my Facebook feed and maybe something gets me angry or I'm frustrated at something I'm reading from the national news, instead of pouring my venom into a Facebook post, which does nothing except put me in a worse mood and make me be even more unbearable to be around for my wife and kids who are trapped in my house with me, You take a credit card and you give $5 to this fund. I mean, that, you know, you could, I mean, or more, of course, or whatever you can. But it is such a great way to channel any type of stress, anxiety, fear you might be feeling, a way to put it into action. So I really, and I think it's already got like $20,000, if I'm not.
There's over $100,000 in that fund already.
Oh, I wasn't off by much. That is great to hear. I'm so happy to be wrong.
Yeah, and we're so excited about it. It just shows the commitment of this community and how people really band together, come together to make such a positive difference whenever it's needed. I'm a transplant to the Valley. And from the day I arrived, I was welcomed with open arms. And I'd worked in a lot of communities where people talked about how they cooperated and partnered, but I never experienced that true spirit of collaboration and partnership as I have experienced here in the Valley. It may sound a little corny. Jack Walsh used to say, that he was heading back to paradise when he would be out of the area for a meeting. And that stuck with me. And, we used to laugh, but there's a lot of truth to that statement right here.
Yeah, definitely, so. Definitely. All right, Susan, is there anything you want to add that I haven't asked you?
You know what, Eugene, you've done, I so appreciate all you've done to get the word out, community, about our local news, our local needs, our local opportunities. And, I encourage, anyone who's listening, follow your passion. There's so much hope. There's so much good happening now. And you can be a part of it, whether it's through the Response and Recovery Fund, through, volunteering for an agency, through support of a particular passion. And if people are in need of help or know someone in need of help, have them call. There's help also for those who need it. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Susan. And I guess next we'll speak, I'll be arranging for you to come on The Great Give. No idea how I'm going to handle it on my end, but something's going to happen. If we have to do podcasts or Zoom, I look forward. And The Great Gift, for anybody who's not familiar, is a 36-hour fundraiser that also benefits countless nonprofits in the Valley. So there's a ton of ways to help people coming up in the next few weeks. So with that, I want to thank you, Susan.
Thank you, Eugene, and I look forward to speaking with you again.
All right, take care.
You too.
Okay, so that was Susan Agame from the Spooner House over in Shelton. Very happy to get a rundown of what's happening with our regional homeless shelter, homeless facility. And again, I'm going to read it. It just came out a few hours ago. In response to the coronavirus pandemic, Valley United Way, Valley Community Foundation, Greater Valley Chamber of Commerce, and Valley Council for Health and Human Services have partnered together to establish the Valley Community COVID-19 Response and Recovery Fund. They are urgently asking you, on behalf of our community, to support this collaborative fund. Your contribution will provide flexible resources to organizations serving the Valley region, especially those who are disproportionately impacted by COVID-19. To donate, go to valleyfoundation.org. Again, it's valleyfoundation.org. Thank you, everyone, for reading and listening to the Valley Indie this week. God bless. Stay safe.
For hundreds of years, we've brought you the news. Printed the info, we gave you the clues. Owners' profits were always sky high. Changing market now threatens our lives.